Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Elmer Kelton's Brush Country. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Eric Messner, Richard Rowan, Thomas Keegan, Michael Glenn, Casey Platt, James Keegan, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Daniel Stevens, Christopher Sheeran, Nanette Savard, Elizabeth Jernigan, Ken Jackson, Michael John Casey, Joseph Thornhill, James Lewis, Tim Carlin, Joe Brack, Margie Tompros, Dylan Lynch, Jeff Allen, and Mort Shelby. Brush Country, Part 1, Barbed Wire. Doug Monahan bent his back over a rocky post hole as he plunged the heavy iron crowbar downward, feeling the violent jar of it bruising the stubborn rock bottom.
Oh, this is a sorry way for a cowboy to make a living.
He rubbed sweat from his forehead onto his sleeve and straightened his sore back, pausing to rest a moment and look around. Across the broad sweep of the gray grass valley, up the brush-dotted hill and down again on the gentle far slope, new cedar posts stood erect like a long row of silent soldiers. And stretched taut down the length of the line, four strands of red barbed wire gleamed brightly in the late winter Texas sun. Doug Monahan had the look of a cowboy about him, the easy, rolling gait, the slack, yet somehow right way of wearing his clothes that stamped him as a man of the saddle. But he wasn't riding now, and he hadn't for quite a spell. Sweat darkened his hickory shirt under the arms and down the back, the spots rimmed with white salt and caked with dirt. The knees of his denim pants were worn through and frazzled out. His brush-scarred boots were run over at the heels from a long time of working afoot. He gripped the crowbar with big leather-gloved hands, lifting it and driving it down into the narrow post hole. Each strike chipped off rock and caliche. Sulfurous sparks flew angrily against his dusty boots. The rocky ground was fighting him every foot of the way. At length, he went down on his knees with a bent can to scoop dirt and chipped rock out of the hole. Wiping sweat from his stubbled face, he stood up. His gritty hands pressed against the small of his back, trying to ease the ache that was there. His gaze drifted in satisfaction back down the fence line, where two other men were also digging post holes. Past them, a dozen cedar posts leaned at crazy angles in unfilled holes an even rod apart. Beyond these stretched the unfinished fence, stout heart cedar posts hauled up from the river and tamped solid in holes nearly 3 feet deep. And on them the heavy number 9 wire gleamed with its bright red coat of factory-dipped paint and its wickedly sharp barbs. The pleasant tang of mesquite smoke drifted to him on the crisp breeze. Monahan looked down toward the chuck wagon. By the sun, which with retreating winter still stood a little to the south, it was almost noon. Paco Sanchez would have dinner ready directly. Monahan frowned a little, watching his wagon. Gordon Finch sat there with three of his men sipping coffee, sat there like a lazy pothound. He had a right to, Monahan supposed, for after all, this was Finch's ranch. But nothing ever graveled Monahan quite so much as to have someone sitting around idly on his fat haunches and watching him work. Doug picked up the crowbar and began chipping again. Hard muscles swelled tight within the rolled-up sleeves as the bar battered its way downward. It was a real come-down for Monahan. Once he'd had a ranch of his own down in the South Texas brush country, and there'd been a time when he might have been too proud to do this kind of work. But a long, hard drought can make a man do things he never thought he would. Doug Monahan was young yet, with a glint of red in his hair and whiskers to go with the Irish name. He had blue eyes that could laugh easily, or could strike quick sparks like the strong iron bar that bruised its way into the resisting earth. Finishing the hole, measuring it by a ring he had painted 30 inches up on the bar, he walked to a small stack of cedar posts. He picked one and dropped it into the hole. He stood it straight, sighting across its axe-hewn top to the hard-set posts which stretched out of view up over the hill. He glanced the other way, where stakes driven in a string-straight line marked the one-rod intervals for more post-holes as far as his eyes could see. He watched rangy longhorn cattle plod along in a single file down a hoof-worn rut that had had its beginning with the buffalo. Headed for water, they found an ancient trail that tomorrow would be blocked forever by these shining red strands of wire.
Company coming yonder, Doug.
Stubb Bailey was pointing to four riders who topped the hill and came down in an easy trot following the new fence. Stubb was a short, thick-set, happy-eyed man Doug had picked up over in Twin Wells, and as good a hand as he had ever run across. Monahan's glance touched the rifle that leaned against the pile of new-cut posts. He hesitated, then moved toward it.
Reckon it's that trouble Finch hinted about?
I hope not.
It's Finch's worry, ain't it? That's what he come for.
Doug's own idea was that Finch had come out to feed his men, and himself, at someone else's wagon. He slipped off the work-stiffened gloves that were worn almost black. Shoving them into a hip pocket, he picked up the rifle and moved unhurriedly toward the wagon.
May not be trouble at all, and I sure don't want Finch starting any.
Monahan was sure of only one thing about Gordon Finch, that he didn't like him. He wasn't even sure why. Maybe it wasn't for Monahan to ask questions or pass any judgment. After all, this wasn't his land. He had come here a stranger and contracted to build a fence for Finch, nothing more. Finch had spotted the riders by the time Monahan reached the wagon. He stood up lazily, squinting, trying to see clearer. He kept sipping the coffee. Monahan suspected he had laced it from the bottle in his coat pocket.
Couple of my boys bringing somebody in.
Finch's shoulders were a little stooped. A soft paunch was beginning to push out over his belt. He had the florid face of the man who drinks too much and doesn't work enough to stay healthy. He could talk loud and make strong promises, as he had when Monahan agreed to take the fencing job. So far, he hadn't so much as paid for wire and posts, though he knew Monahan was working on a shoestring. He hadn't even furnished grub to the fencing crew. He had come here yesterday telling of a rumor that there might be trouble at the fencing camp. Not everybody liked this barbed wire.
You just go right on putting up fence. We're here to protect you.
Finch's men had done some scouting around, but all Finch himself had done so far was protect the chuck wagon. Monahan saw worry in old Paco Sanchez's black eyes. Paco dropped a hot Dutch oven lid back over browning biscuits and wiped his dark rheumatic hands on a flour sack apron. His troubled gaze dwelt on the approaching riders.
Go on with the cooking, Paco. Stick close to the wagon.
The aging Mexican nodded and eased toward the chuck box. His eyes, bright as black buttons, flicked from Monahan's rifle to the four riders, then back again. Paco had lived many a long year within gunshot distance of the Rio Grande. He had seen much violence. Now he was gentled by age, old and weary and dreading. Monahan sometimes wished he could have left Paco in South Texas, for the old man deserved an easier life than this in his declining years. But nothing had remained to leave him with. The Bar M Ranch was lost, and the cattle with it. Stubb Bailey eased and shook his head.
Won't be no trouble out of them two, Doug. That's just old man Noah Wheeler.
Who's Noah Wheeler?
That grubby old nester got hold of four good sections of land that ought to be in somebody's ranch. Raises hay and sells it to some of them two big cowmen. He's got chickens, ducks, even some hogs. The rest of the nesters around here went and settled along Oak Creek, but not him. He had to go out and grab a hold of good rangeland. Somebody ought to have run him back with the rest of the dirt farmers a long time ago.
Monahan glanced at Stubb Bailey. Stubb had been around Twin Wells long enough to know a little about most people here, and Monahan could tell that Bailey disagreed with Finch. He could see that the old farmer was eyeing the red wire closely as he rode in. Noah Wheeler was a blocky man, solid as a rock fence. He sat his horse firmly without the cowboy's easy, even, lazy way of riding. His battered black hat fit squarely, its brim flat for shade and not for show. He wore a plain woolen coat, frayed with signs of hard work and long use. His heavy mustache, once brown, was now salted with gray. The rider beside him was a girl. Long skirts all but covered the side saddle she rode. She was slender, the man's coat she wore fitting her rather like a collapsed tent. She seemed dwarfed by a wide-brimmed cowboy hat, evidently lined with paper to keep it on tight.
Morning, Noah. How's the world serving you?
Wheeler smiled, a pleasant, eye-crinkling smile that held nothing back.
I can't complain about the world, but I sure wish this rheumatism would leave me alone.
Finch glared at the pair. His questioning eyes cut to one of the riders who flanked the old man and the girl.
Found him coming down the fence. Noah said he was just looking for a way through, and I don't expect he meant any harm. But you said bring anybody we found, so we brung him.
If for no better reason than the contempt he saw in Finch's face, Monahan felt an instinctive liking for the farmer.
All right, Wheeler, move along.
This is my camp. I'll say who goes. Mr. Wheeler, sorry to have bothered you. We've been expecting a little trouble. You all light and rest yourselves. Paco's got Chuck about ready.
Wheeler's eyes lighted, and he forced down a smile as Finch sharply turned away. He stepped down from his old high horn saddle and stamped his heavy boots, trying to restore the circulation in his cold feet.
Thank you, friend. We got food in the saddlebags. We didn't expect to run into anybody.
Hot meal's a sight better.
Monahan moved toward the girl, hands outstretched, and lifted her down from the saddle. For just a second, their eyes met. She gave him a quick smile, then shyly looked away. By her blue eyes, he took her to be Wheeler's daughter. Wheeler confirmed it.
My name's Noah Wheeler. This is my daughter, Trudy.
Wheeler's giant hand was rough as dried leather and crushing strong. He'd spent his life at hard work. Monahan bowed toward the girl in the old cowboy manner. She took off her big hat. He saw a fine-featured face, almost a pretty face, and honey-colored hair done up in long braids tied at the back of her neck. Again, there was that shy smile. Country girl, right enough.
If I'd have known we were fixing to have such company, I'd have cleaned up a little. I imagine I looked like a prairie dog.
The girl made no reply, only smiled again.
A working man ought never to apologize for his looks.
Wheeler eyed the camp curiously.
We've been hunting a few head of our stock. We try to keep them at home, but there's always some of these long-legged Texas cattle coming in and leading them off.
He studied the stacks of cedar posts that had been brought in by wagon. He bent over the red spools of barbed wire. He stooped stiffly and picked up a short curl of wire that had been snipped from a spool. He fingered it as if afraid it might bite.
Barbed wire. Heard her right smart about it, but this is the first I ever seen. Sharp. These things could really rip up an animal.
They learn in a hurry. You can't hardly get one to hit it a second time.
You look like a man who'd know horses. Pretty intelligent a horse is, but about a few things he hasn't got the sense of a jackrabbit. If there's anything in 10 miles that'll hurt him, he'll find it, especially if he's the best horse you got. The stuff's all right, I guess. I just hate to think what it'd do to a horse.
Monahan washed his face and hands in a basin of cold water. He dug coffee cups out of the chuck box and poured them full. He handed one to the girl and felt pleasure at her half-concealed smile. She hadn't yet said a word. He watched for and caught the pleasant surprise in the girl's blue eyes as she first tasted the coffee. Paco Sanchez had the Mexican way of boiling sugar right in with the coffee. It was sweeter that way than if he just spooned sugar into the cup and stirred it. Monahan handed a second cup to Wheeler and poured one for himself.
Most people think that way about barbed wire the first time they see it. I did too. But it isn't like that. I'll admit, it might cut a few at first, but you'd be surprised how fast they learn. They're using a lot of it down in South Texas. It's the answer for the stockmen, Mr. Wheeler. Especially a fellow like you, farming and running cattle both. Country's too dry to grow hedges, and it'd bust the back end out of a bank to build a wood fence around a big pasture. But barbed wire's cheap. Most anybody can afford it. A couple of the farmers over on Oak Creek are interested. As soon as I finish this job, I'm going to do a little fencing there.
Maybe you're right, but lots of people don't like barbed wire. I've heard some bad things.
They just don't know. Anything new like this, it takes time.
Paco Sanchez walked up with pothook in hand. He lifted the coal-covered lid off the biscuits and set it down, leaning it against the edge of the Dutch oven. In another oven, hanging on a hook suspended from the crossbar above the fire, steaks sizzled in deep grease. Paco poked at them with a long fork. Satisfied, he took the pothook and hoisted them away from the heat.
Está listo, Doug.
Doug bowed and motioned the girl toward the chuck box. Paco Sanchez stood beaming as she filled her plate from his ovens. Paco's skin was like fine brown leather, with just a trace of a shine across his high cheekbones at the upper edge of his coarse gray whiskers. He'd come up from the rancho south of the Rio Grande, way yonder ago, up to the South Texas brush. For more years than Paco could count, he had worked as a vaquero, a brush popper, his tough skin seared by the sun, scarred by clawing thorns. He had worked cattle for Monahan's father, and he had helped bring up Doug Monahan, had taught him the way of the vaquero. Now crushed bones and his many years were piling up on him. The old Mexican was finishing out his time over the cook fires. No pensioner, Paco. He wanted only to work, to stay with the Monahans. The aging chuck box with a bar M burned deeply into each side was all that was left to show for the ranch. And Doug was the only Monahan. While eating, Doug found himself watching the girl. These farmer girls were taught to be wary of strangers, especially a stranger who looked like a cowboy. She and her father ate silently and hungrily. Monahan could tell they'd had a long ride. He felt a touch of pity for the girl. Pretty thing she was, like a wild flower growing up in the middle of nowhere. A girl like this was meant to be seen. Noah Wheeler pushed to his feet. He took his daughter's empty plate and cup and dropped them into the rec pan along with his own.
Fine dinner. We sure did enjoy it.
Gracias. The camp is yours.
Wheeler turned to Monahan.
We'd best get along if we're going to find our cattle. No telling where those longhorns have led them to.
He looked once again at the barbed wire fence, which was edging slowly out across the range.
Going to be a big change. Always been open country. How far do you figure on going with it?
I've contracted to build it all the way around Finch's Range.
Finch's Range?
Wheeler gave the rancher a sharp, questioning glance.
You got more ambition than I thought you had, Mr. Finch.
Finch's eyes flashed anger. Wheeler walked to his horse and swung heavily into the old saddle. Monahan gave the girl a boost up.
Thank you, Mr. Monahan. Maybe someday we can return the favor.
He watched them ride away, his eyes mostly on the girl.
About time they left. They got the smell of hogs about them.
Flaring, Monahan turned to answer Finch, then thought better of it. He hadn't been paid yet. Monahan knew it was trouble as soon as he saw the horseman. He was using a shovel handle to tamp fresh dirt tightly while Stub Bailey held a post straight. Looking up, Bailey stiffened.
Uh-oh. Look yonder coming.
Doug let the shovel rest against his broad shoulder. He rubbed his sleeve across his forehead and blinked at the burn of sweat that worked into his eyes.
That ain't Noah Wheeler. Must be 30, 40 of them.
Monahan squinted. 15 or 20 more like it, but that was enough. The riders were moving along the fence line. As they moved, men stepped down from their saddles, stopping to snip the wire.
They mean business, looks like. Cutting it between every post.
Down at the chuck wagon, Gordon Finch stood frozen, watching and not making a move. Anger sweeping him like a sudden blaze in dry grass, Monahan dropped the shovel, grabbed his rifle, and sprinted down to the wagon.
Finch! Where's that protection? You sat around here filling your belly and getting in the way. Now what are you going to do?
My men. They rounded up all my men and taken them along. There ain't a thing I can do.
Monahan's small fencing crew gathered and stood tensely beside the wagon where Paco Sanchez's cook fire had burned down to a few glowing coals, which he was keeping alive for supper.
You want us to fight, Doug?
Stubb Bailey spun the cylinder of a six-shooter.
Put it up. We don't have a chance, and there's no use getting somebody killed.
Monahan set down his rifle and stood there waiting. The riders came on leisurely, knowing they had the upper hand. They didn't leave behind them a single piece of wire more than 20 feet long.
Oh, we're in for it. That's the old He-Coon himself in the lead yonder, riding a gray horse. Captain Andrew Reinhardt. He don't answer to nobody, not even to God.
A chill worked down Doug Monahan's back. He knew that this was going to be nasty, but this was Finch's land. He ought to have the right to do what he wanted to with it. The horsemen crowded in close, forming a semicircle around the small fencing crew. Gordon Finch held back, sliding behind the chuck box. The captain edged forward on his big gray, as fine a horse as a man would ever see. Captain Andrew Reinhardt was a man of strong will and fierce pride. He was an aging cowman with clipped gray beard and piercing eyes that stabbed from under heavy gray brows. Despite the weight of years, his back was rigid. Not a young cowboy with him sat straighter in the saddle. He was one of those real old patriarchs Monahan knew. One of the kind who had whipped and carved this state into being. You still found a few like him down in South Texas. Monahan knew the breed, for his father had been one. Most of them are gone now. Those commanding eyes searched the fencing crew, then lit on Monahan.
You're in charge here.
Monahan took a step forward.
It's my camp. I'm Doug Monahan.
Monahan, you're trespassing.
Monahan felt the stretch of tension within him. He had heard about Captain Reinhardt. This old man controlled the R-Cross, which sprawled haphazardly over a big part of Kiowa County, its boundaries ragged and loose and uncontested. Once a Texas Ranger and later an officer in the Confederate Army, he had been the first man to move into this county and stay. He had pushed the Indians out. In the years that followed, no one had ever seriously challenged him. Kiowa County had said on the map. Around here, they called it Reinhardt County more often than not.
Well, now, we have a contract from Gordon Finch to fence his ranch, so I don't see how we could be trespassing.
Reinhardt's gaze searched over the men on the ground.
Where is Gordon Finch? Finch, step out here!
Finch moved hesitantly. He came out from behind the chuck box and stood beside Monahan. His mouth opened, and in his face was a fleeting intention to speak up to this stern old cowman. Then his eyes fell, and his mouth closed.
I never would have thought you had the nerve, Finch. Now you're through around here. Catch up your horse and get.
Without lifting his eyes to those of the men around him, Gordon Finch walked out to where his horse stood hitched to a stunty mesquite behind the woodpile. He swung into the saddle, shoulders sagging.
Sell out and leave. I don't want to see you around here again.
Just like that. Sell out and leave. And Monahan knew Finch would do it. Finch rode off without a glance at Monahan. His cowboys followed after him, all but one, whose name Monahan remembered was Dundee. Dundee held back a moment, his eyes touching Monahan's and making a silent apology. Dundee's holster was empty. Some R-Cross cowboy had gotten himself a six-shooter mighty cheap. Reinhardt's gaze cut back to Monahan.
This isn't Finch's range. It's mine. It always was.
Monahan clenched his rough fist. He ought to have guessed, but he hadn't. Finch had tried to run a Sandy, and he hadn't had the nerve it took to go through with it.
He told me it was his, and I had no reason to doubt him.
Reinhardt's eyes were cold. He thought Monahan was lying. The captain glanced at a man who sat beside him on a black-legged dun.
All right, Archer.
Men stepped down from the horses and started throwing loose cedar posts up into a pile. They heaved the red spools of wire up atop the posts. Someone took Paco Sanchez's big coal oil can and started pouring kerosene.
Reinhardt, I tell you, I didn't know. Finch lied to me. Everything I've got is tied up here. Finch hasn't paid me a cent.
If Reinhardt heard him, he gave no sign of it. He just sat there stiffly on a big gray horse, watching.
Burn it, Archer.
Archer was a tall, angular man of about 35, a stiff-backed man who might have been the captain's son. He was so much like him. He had the same aristocratic bearing, the same strong face, the same driving will. He struck a match on the sole of his boot and flipped it onto the posts near the bottom of the pile. The flames licked upward, spreading hungrily, seeking out the kerosene. Monahan took an angry step forward, then stopped as he felt a gun barrel poke him in the back. Reinhardt's men pitched his crew's bedding and camp gear into the flames. The one called Archer stood watching the fire, his face grimly silent. It was then that Monahan noticed the man's eyes. They were black, compelling eyes, framed in heavy dark brows and long black lashes, eyes that burned with a ruthlessness that seemed even greater than the captain's. Monahan remembered then he had heard of this man, too. Archer Spann, his name was. Foreman of the R-Cross, and the captain all over again, except younger. The captain had never had a son, they said, but he had found Archer Spann, and Spann was as much like him as a son could ever be. Spann picked up the kerosene can and climbed up into the chuck wagon. He poured the rest of the contents out over the chuck box and into the wagon bed. Paco Sanchez had held still through all that had happened. Suddenly now he broke loose as he realized that the old Bar M chuck wagon was about to be destroyed.
No, no! Don't you burn my wagon!
He grabbed at Spann's long legs, trying to pull him down. Spann lifted the heavy can and swung it at Paco's head. Spann pitched a match into the kerosene. As the flames spread, he dropped down from the wagon. Near Paco's hands, the water basin had fallen to the ground. He grabbed it, scooped up sand, and threw it on the flames. Spann jerked the pan from his twisted hands. In a moment of wild confusion, one of the horses, nervous already because of the fire, broke into pitching. Raging now at the destruction of his wagon, Paco found his fallen pothook.
No, Paco!
Spann stepped back in sudden alarm as the pothook swung. Paco never had a chance to swing it again.
Paco!
Monahan rushed to the old Mexican, grabbing him and dragging him back from the flames. In desperation, he ripped away the cook's heavy black shirt. Paco's tough old fingers closed on Monahan's hand, telling in their own way what Paco wanted to say. Then they relaxed, and the scarred, twisted hand fell away. Monahan was on his knees, stunned, just holding Paco's body and not knowing what to do. Then, gently, he eased him down to earth and stood up, trembling in fury. Spann was watching him, his own face taut. He held the smoking gun, its barrel leveled at Monahan.
Put the gun away, Archer.
Monahan leaped at the man. He saw the gun barrel tilt upward. He grabbed Spann's wrist and forced the gun aside. He reached for Spann's throat, and Spann wrenched loose. Monahan lay there, tasting sand. He pushed onto his knees, trying to clear his head and find Spann again, but the horseman seemed to swirl around him. He was conscious of the flames, the stench of smoke, but he couldn't see. There was sand in his eyes and a blinding pain flash of red. Reinhardt's riders held their nervous horses as still as they could, gripped in sudden shock by the quick explosion of violence, the death of the old Mexican. It had not been part of the plan. Reinhardt's riders waited uncertainly, and Monahan waited too, half expecting the gun to roar again.
I said, put it up!
Spann dropped the six-shooter back into its holster. Cold reason returned to Monahan then. He blinked hard, shaking his head, trying to clear his sight. He couldn't fight them now, but he wouldn't forget. He'd bide his time and take whatever else they dealt him, but there would be another day. The bed of the blazing wagon broke. Horses danced excitedly away from the flames. Captain Reinhardt held his big brave with a strong, steady hand.
We didn't come to kill anybody, Monahan. I didn't mean it to happen. But it doesn't change anything. This is open range. It was that way when I came here, and it will remain so. Now move out, Monahan. Don't stop for anything. Move out, and don't come back.
Reinhardt turned his gray horse about then and pulled away without a backward glance. His cowboys drew aside to let him pass, then they fell in behind him. Some of them looked back at the blazing ruin of the camp, but Captain Reinhardt never did. Doug Monahan dragged himself to the old Mexican. He gripped the corded brown hand, closing his eyes against the sudden rush of hot tears. Stubb Bailey came and laid his hand on Monahan's shoulder.
I can't remember a time when Paco Sanchez wasn't somewhere around. As far back as I can remember, he's been with me.
Paco had taught him, had guided him, had occasionally used the double of a rope on him when Doug's own father wasn't there and the job needed doing.
Time has a way going on, Doug. Takes away the old things we've been used to. Can't hold them forever.
Bailey and the others of the fencing crew threw sand on the fires, snuffing them out. Doug couldn't stand up to it, and right now he didn't care. Presently, he looked up to find the fires out. Bailey was digging around under a flat rock just outside of camp. He came back carrying a bottle, wiping off the dirt onto his shirt. He held the bottle out to Doug.
Take a good stiff one. You need it. One thing they didn't burn up. Bet you didn't even know I had this.
I knew you had it. I just didn't know where.
Bad as the whiskey was, it made Monahan feel better. Stubb knelt uncomfortably beside him, looking at Paco. One of the men dragged a half-burned blanket out of the fire and covered the body with it.
We saved some of the stuff. Cedar ain't easy burn, so most of the posts are still good. Them wooden spools burn quick, though. The wires tangled up into an awful mess. Lost the temper, too, I expect. I don't reckon it'll be to where we can salvage much of it.
Monahan stood up to look over the shambles.
Thanks, Stubb.
You better let me fix that place where they hit you. It don't look good.
It'll be all right.
What do we do now?
First thing, we better see if we can find a shovel that isn't burned up.
They had to bury Paco without so much as the scripture, for the only Bible had been in the chuck box. It hadn't been used much. Sometime, Monahan thought he would try to find a priest and bring him out here. Right now, a short prayer had to do. They'd just finished filling the grave when Noah Wheeler and his daughter came back, driving three plodding Durham cows. The cows warily skirted the camp, but the two riders came straight in. Their eyes were grim as they read the meaning in the burned-out camp, the cut fence, the new mound of earth, where a fire-blackened piece of the chuck box lid stood as a temporary headboard. The old farmer solemnly looked over the faces of the men in camp, mentally tallying up.
The cook?
Monahan nodded stiffly.
Who did it?
Reinhardt.
The captain? He's a hard man on occasion, but he's never killed without the need for it.
Archer Spann did the shooting.
Cold as ice. He's the man they say will own the R-Cross someday. I reckon it's my fault. I should have told you it was Reinhardt's range, but I figured it was none of my business.
Wouldn't have mattered. It was already too late.
Trudy Wheeler carefully touched the wound on Monahan's head.
That looks bad.
It'll heal.
Y'all better come with us for tonight. We got plenty of room at home and plenty to eat.
No. Captain's down on us. You take us in, he's liable to bear down on you, too.
No, we've never had any trouble with the captain. I'm just an old dirt farmer. Nobody bothers me. Now, you come along with us and get some rest.
Trudy Wheeler reached far into the overturned water barrel on the ground beside the blackened wagon and found a little water there. She soaked a handkerchief in it and returned to Monahan.
We're going to clean that wound.
Trudy's fingers were quick and sure and gentle. Watching her closely, keenly aware of the nearness of her, Monahan realized that Trudy Wheeler was less a girl than she was a woman, and that there was much beauty and maturity about her that a man might miss the first time he looked.
Too bad we have nothing to put on this.
Bailey brought out his bottle again, gazed regretfully at the little bit still in the bottom of it, and handed it to her.
Here.
Y'all catch up your horses. They're going over to our place.
Monahan gave in because the men had to sleep somewhere, and there was nothing left of the camp.
Just for tonight, then. Tomorrow we'll leave.
Doug Monahan half expected to see the usual next-to-starvation look he had found in so many dugout and brush corral nester outfits, including some of the farms over on Oak Creek. He was surprised. Hard work and careful planning had gone into Noah Wheeler's place, and it showed.
Got four sections here. That is, I'm sort of partners with a bank in Fort Worth, you might say. Most of it's still grazing land. I've got 60 or 70 acres broken out, about all that I can farm by myself.
Four sections. If you went by deeded land, that probably made Noah Wheeler about as big an actual landowner as there was in this part of the country right now. That was more than 2,500 acres, if you figured land that way. This wasn't the high rainfall land of East Texas. Here it took more land to produce as much, and most people figured it in sections instead of by acres. Monahan wondered if Captain Reinhardt owned title to as much as four sections. He probably did. Most of the cowmen hereabouts had bought the land where they built their headquarters, and where they could, they bought that around their best water. Control of the water gave control of the land, even though the most of it still belonged to the state, or to schools, or to the railroads, which had received it as a grant in earlier times. The ranchers ran their cattle on this land without let because so far there had been little other claims on it. They might only own one section in fee, yet control 20. There were some who owned no land at all, but simply let their cattle run loose on the open range. By unwritten rule, such land could be used by the first man who claimed it, and any other man who tried to usurp it had better throw a mighty big shadow. Gordon Finch had tried, and he hadn't made it. This unwritten title was so well established by custom that a man might sell his ranch to another without actually owning the land. 15 or 20 good Durham cows were grazing in a green winter oat patch.
I notice you ain't got no fence around any of it.
Wheeler proudly waved his hand toward the cattle.
That's going to be the end of the Longhorn. I'm building me a nice little herd of Durhams. You won't find any better in 100 miles. I've already got a few cowmen buying bulls from me, and I'll sell a lot more as my herd grows. A few years from now, they'll have the Longhorn blood pretty well bred out of the country.
The three cows the Wheelers had brought back trotted out into the field toward the others, pausing here and there to grab a bite of green oats.
This is wide open country. How can you hold your strain pure if you can't keep the native bulls out of here?
That's the biggest trouble we got. We just have to ride our country good every day or two and run the Longhorns out. It's the best we can do. A Longhorn calf shows up from one of our cows, we just have to figure on making beef of it. We can't keep it in the herd.
They skirted past the oat field. Next to it, lying fallow through the winter, was Wheeler's hayland, plowed clean and neat, the furrows arrow straight. This field was circled by two strands of slick wire put up on crooked mesquite posts.
Will that fence turn the cow back?
Not if she wants in very bad. And when the field is green, they want in.
A Durham bull and two cows came plodding back from water.
There's my bull. He's got a pedigree and a name as long as your arm, but I just call him Sancho, because he's such a pet.
He was a big roan bull, not so leggy as the Longhorns, but deeper bodied, with flanks coming down farther and a wide, full rump that would carve out a lot of beef.
The only trouble with him, he can't outfight these native bulls. I almost had to shoot one of Fuller Quinn's the other day to keep him from killing Sancho. But one way of looking at it, old Sancho will win out in the long run. His progeny will still be around when the Longhorns are gone. It's nice to be able to count your cattle in the thousands like Captain Reinhardt, but I'll settle for having better quality.
A scattering of chickens scratched all about the place. Ducks swam leisurely in a large earthen tank. A few hogs rooted around in damp ground in a pen back a healthy distance east of the house. Noah Wheeler's solid frame house stood near a spring that bubbled a strong, clear stream of water, the beginnings of a small creek which wound down past the fields and out across the grazing land. Both the house and the barn behind it were painted a bright red. Red barn paint was cheap and not hard to get.
Built the house myself. Hauled the lumber down from the railroad right after they built into Stringtown.
It was a good house, a pleasant-looking house, though not a big one. Monahan wondered where the old stock farmer intended to bed them down.
There's a lean-to out in the barn, built it for my son Vern. If we can't find enough bedding for you fellers, we got plenty of hay out there to help stretch it.
What about your son? Won't we be crowding him?
No. Farming got too slow for Vern. He's over at the R Cross working for the captain. Vern's not cut out for a plow, I guess. There's work aplenty here for both of us, but he'd rather cowboy and be on his own. We don't see him much anymore.
There's a girl in town he likes, and he's saving every dime he can. He's afraid if he gets off of that ranch, he'll spend some of the money.
Noah Wheeler rode past the barn and stood up in the stirrups looking over into the corral.
Wonder if old Roney's had her calf yet.
Monahan saw a fine Durham cow that was springing heavy and had made a bag. It was easy to see that the calf was due any day now.
Roney's my pet. Best cow I ever owned, or ever saw, for that matter. She's fixing to have a calf by Sancho, and it'll be the best one in the country when it gets here. I'd bet my boots on that.
Dad's been like a kid at Christmas waiting for that calf.
Noah Wheeler dismounted and opened the corral gate.
Bring the horses on in. We got plenty of feed for them. While you get unsaddled, Trudy and the missus will rustle you up something to eat.
Doug found Mrs. Wheeler a strong, clear-eyed farm woman who talked with her husband's warm enthusiasm for their place and for the country in general. She ran the house in a quiet fashion, but with a firm hand. Doug thought he could see where Trudy Wheeler had gotten her deceptively shy manner. Suddenly, Monahan was glad he had come. Sitting here in the front room of their little house, enjoying the company of these good people, he'd forgotten his own trouble for a time.
You haven't got any business moving out till you get yourself rested a little. Why don't you stay with us a day or two?
Just tonight. We'll leave in the morning.
What do you figure on doing?
I'm not real sure what I'll do later. First thing, I've got a bill to collect from Gordon Finch.
Finch's headquarters lay near the bottom of a long slope, with a big, shallow, natural lake just below it, lying lazy in the late winter sun. Spotted cattle of every color watered at its edge, which already was beginning to shrink away from the rank growth of weeds and grass that had sprung up after last summer's rains, and now lay dead and brown from the winter frost. Doug Monahan skirted the lake, Stub Bailey riding beside him. He had sent the rest of the men directly to town to wait for him.
Natural location for a ranch headquarters. Old man named Jinx settled it first. They say Finch cheated him out of it some way or another.
Sitting high on the slope was a big rock house that would be Gordon Finch's. Riding in, Monahan saw corrals that had loose or broken planks and needed repair. A gate sagged and was half patched with wire. An old broken-down wagon stood right where the axle had snapped. No one had bothered to fix it or move it out of the way. Weeds had grown up through the rotting wagon bed. Monahan rode up to the house, dismounted, and strode up the steps. The house had been built out of rock hauled in from a breaky stretch of hills a mile or so off yonder up the creek, and Doug was reasonably sure it had been built by Finch's predecessor. It was too good for Finch. There was a good chance Finch was inside, avoiding him, but pushing in might give Finch an excuse to put the sheriff on him. Monahan turned and walked back down to the horses. Down across the yard was a long frame building with smoke curling out of a tin chimney.
We'll try the cook shack. One thing we know for sure, he likes to eat.
A man stood in the cook shack door, blocking Monahan's way. Monahan sensed that he'd come to the right place.
Mr. Finch ain't here.
You sure?
I said he ain't.
I heard you.
Monahan made a move toward the door. The cowboy reached behind him and brought up a shotgun.
Stay where you're at, Monahan.
Doug turned quickly at the sound, not wanting to be caught between two of Finch's men. He saw the cowboy named Dundee, who had been with Finch at the fencing camp.
Don't pay him no mind, Monahan. He won't use that shotgun. And Finch is in there all right, hiding from you. Been looking back over his shoulder ever since we rode away from your camp.
Monahan stared curiously at Dundee, then back to the cowboy at the door.
Well, what about it?
The cowboy slowly lowered the shotgun and stood back. Monahan stepped through the door and blinked in the dim light. There, behind the bare dinner table, sat Finch, a cup of coffee and a whiskey bottle in front of him. He scowled, but in his eyes, Monahan could see the sick touch of fear.
What you want, Monahan?
I want my pay.
You didn't finish that fence. I don't owe you nothing.
Paco Sanchez was worth more to me than all the land and cattle you'll ever own, and you got him killed. But I'll settle for payment for 2 miles of fence completed. 21 spools of barbed wire burned. All the posts I can't salvage. And 2 wagons. I got that figured down to $2,400 even money. I'll take a check right now.
I ain't paying you nothing, Monahan. You took that job and you didn't finish it.
Finch, you used me to try to run a bluff you didn't have the guts for yourself. You ran off like a scalded dog and left me and my men to take the whipping for you. You're going to pay me for that.
Put him out of here, Haskell. If he won't go, use that shotgun.
The man raised the gun, but hesitated to move further. Dundee stepped through the door and placed a firm hand on Haskell's arm.
Haskell, if you want Monahan run off, let him do it himself.
Dundee, you're fired!
I was fixing to leave anyhow. This outfit's washed up.
Bailey appeared in the doorway, prepared to help Monahan if Dundee threw in with Finch. But that wasn't going to happen. Monahan looked at the cowboy, thanking him with his eyes. Then he turned back to Finch.
If you haven't got a blank check, I have.
Monahan pulled one from his shirt pocket and dropped it on the table.
It's all filled out. All you got to do is sign it.
You can't get away with this. It's robbery.
It's payment for a job. Legal. And I got a witness.
He glanced at Dundee and was caught off guard when Finch lunged. Then anger gushed through Monahan. He surged back at Finch. Fear flickered in his eyes as Finch stared wildly at Monahan. He had triggered this fight out of desperation, and now suddenly he was afraid, not knowing how to stop it. Hatred burned in Monahan, but he checked himself. Finch would not fight back now. Do what he might, Monahan later would be ashamed of himself. He gripped Finch's collar and jerked him up close. He heaved him backward into a chair.
Sign that check, Finch.
Finch signed it while Monahan tried to stop his nosebleed. Dundee moved a step inside the door.
Just as well write me one, too. I got a month's pay coming.
Never looking up, Finch dug a blank check out of his wallet and wrote it out. He turned away then, staring out the greasy cook shack window, sagging in defeat. Bailey still stood at the door, hand on his gun, ready in case the trouble got bigger than Monahan was.
Let's go to town, Stubb.
Dundee followed him out.
Be all right with you if I tag along? Looks like my business around here is all wound up.
Suit yourself.
I got a war bag and a roll over at the bunkhouse and a horse in the corral. I got no goodbyes to say.
Directly, he rode back, thin bedroll secured behind the saddle, a war bag of clothing and personal belongings hanging from the saddle horn atop his rope. He rode a long-legged bay horse that had a strong showing of thoroughbred. Monahan looked questioningly at the bay.
Don't worry, he's mine. I owned him when I came here, and I've had to pay Finch for all the feed he's at.
They edged around the lake, scattering cattle again. Monahan showed some uncertainty about the trail to town, and Dundee pointed it out.
What do you do now, Dundee?
Never gone hungry yet. What about you?
Buy me a new outfit and start over again, more than likely.
You mean build more fence?
It's a living.
You're on Reinhardt's list now. You build another fence around here and the captain's liable to wrap that barbed wire around your neck.
You won't find it easy to do.
It was mid-afternoon when they reached town. Stubb Bailey was looking toward the saloon and licking his lips, but Monahan had his eyes on the bank.
First thing I gotta do is deposit this check before Finch sends in here to stop payment.
I reckon I can use my money, too.
Bailey pulled his horse aside.
Go ahead, then. You all know where I'll be at.
The teller was a small, middle-aged man, bald and friendly-looking. He glanced at Monahan's check, and his forehead wrinkled in surprise.
What's the matter?
The teller shook his head.
Nothing wrong, Mr. Monahan. Just endorse it, will you?
While Doug scrawled his name across the check with a scratchy bank pen, Another man stepped out of the back office. He was a huge old gentleman, weighing perhaps 300 pounds.
Albert, come over here, will you? Mr. Monahan, I want you to meet Albert Brown, president of the bank. Albert, you've lost a bet.
Pulling his glasses down from his forehead to his nose, the portly banker read Finch's check and the endorsement.
Well, well, I wouldn't have believed it.
You see, Mr. Monahan, when you first came here, Albert bet me $10 Gordon Finch would weasel out of paying you for any fence that you might build. After I heard about what happened yesterday, I was ready to forfeit to him.
It was worth losing the bet. I just wish we could collect what Finch owes us.
Albert glanced at Monahan's right hand. Doug was suddenly conscious of the skinned knuckles.
Perhaps we could if we were a little younger and had your method.
You could always sit on him, Albert.
Huh. One of these days, I'm going to sit on you.
Monahan took out enough cash to pay off his men. Then he waited on the boardwalk outside while Dundee cashed his check. Twin Wells was pretty much an average for a West Texas cow town. It had the essentials. From the bank's front walk, he could count two mercantile stores, five saloons, a church, and a school. Scattered around haphazardly were one good hotel, one cheap one, a big livery barn at the head of the street, and a smaller one at the far end to keep the big one honest. There was a blacksmith shop and a little chili joint. Dominating the town was the courthouse, an imposing two-story rock building squarely in the center of a large block of fenced-in ground that probably was as big as the rest of the business section put together. In the summertime, cowboys would ride into town and tie their horses along this stake fence in the shade of the big live oaks, instead of in the sun at the hitch racks that stood in front of most of the business houses. Behind the courthouse stood a smaller structure, built of the same stone, looking very much like the courthouse, except that its windows were barred. Just then, Dundee came out.
I'm going over and talk to the sheriff.
I'll string along with you if it's all the same. I'm curious what Luke McKelvey's going to say.
Up to you.
They strode across the hoof-scarred street, pausing to let a cowboy ride past them, a loaded wagon rolled by. The live oaks had held their leaves all winter, and now they were a muddy green, almost ready to fall and give way to the fresh leaves that spring would bring. They passed under the big trees and through the open gate toward the jail. The sheriff sat at his desk, frowning over a fresh batch of reward dodgers. Luke McKelvey was 50 or so. He had a lawman look about him, but somewhere back yonder he'd been a cowboy before he strayed off into the devious trails of politics, Doug Monahan judged. He still retained a little of the cowboy, but years in town with easy work and not much heavy riding had left him a shade soft around the middle, a little broad across the hips.
I'm Doug Monahan.
The sheriff looked up with tired gray eyes. He stood and extended his hand.
Evening. Figured you'd be in sooner or later. Sit down. You too, Dundee.
You heard about yesterday?
The captain was in with Span, they told me.
You could have come out and investigated.
I did. Rode all the way out there, and all I could find was a grave.
Monahan felt a touch of guilt for the way he had spoken. He had taken it for granted that the sheriff had done nothing.
You should have waited for me. I just buried the old man and rid off like that.
Didn't seem to be much else we could do. We had no food left or bedding or anything.
Well, I don't reckon it matters now anyway.
One thing matters to me. What are you gonna do?
What should I do?
A man was killed out there. We all know who killed him. You do anything about murder around here?
About murder? Yes. But was it murder? Look at it the way I am. In the first place, you were trespassing. You had no business out there.
I took the job in good faith. I didn't know I was trespassing.
Whether you knew it or not, you were. Take it to court, they'd find the captain was only protecting his property. Now, in the second place, your man had a pot hook in his hand, and he could have brained Archer Spann with it. Now, I'll grant you Spann maybe didn't have to kill him, but he did. and I expect any jury would acquit him on the grounds of self-defense. We gotta look at it for what it is, Monahan. Whatever he was to you, to folks around here, he was just an old Mexican that nobody knew, in a place where he shouldn't have been.
Is that the way you feel, McKelvey?
No, it isn't. I hate to see any man die, but I gotta be practical. There's no use of putting the county to the expense of arrest and trial of a man the jury's bound to turn loose anyhow. There's nothing you or me can do. You'd best forget about it.
Just like that. They killed the old man who brought me up, and I'm supposed to forget it?
That and a little more. I'm advising you to gather up whatever loose ends you got around here and leave, Monahan. It's my job to keep the peace, and I got an uneasy feeling it won't be peaceful as long as you stay.
Is that an order, McKelvey?
Just good advice.
I'm not ready to go yet. Maybe, like you say, there's nothing I can do about the men who killed Paco. But I'll guarantee you this. I'm not leaving till I try.
Wait a minute, Monahan. I don't blame you for the way you feel, but I'm not gonna let you stir up a lot of trouble. First time you step over the line, I'll bring you in.
Yeah, we'll see.
Walking back across the dusty street, Doug Monahan managed to get a tight rein on his anger.
What about the sheriff?
He didn't say anything that wasn't the truth. McKelvey's a pretty good kind of man. Punched cattle for the captain a long time ago till the captain got him made sheriff. It was about like staying on the R-Cross payroll, but things have changed here lately. People coming in, people that don't figure Reinhardt's got any claim on them. Been tough on McKelvey sometimes, I expect, being sheriff for them and the captain too. He wants to be fair, and he's having a hard time figuring out what fair is.
They stepped up onto the plank sidewalk that fronted the little saloon where Stubb Bailey had gone. The small sign said, Texas Town, Christopher Hadley, proprietor. Two men sat on the edge of the porch, whittling and spitting and soaking up the fleeting sunshine. They stared curiously at Monahan. Doug knew the story had gone all over town, probably all over the county. It was a shotgun-shaped saloon, narrow in front, but somehow longer than it had looked outside. Stubb Bailey sat at a table toward the back. The rest of the fencing crew was there with him. The proprietor brought two fresh glasses. Bailey poured the two full from a bottle he had sitting in front of him. He hurriedly drank what was left of his own glass and refilled that, too.
I always like an even start with the crowd. You're all the talk around here today, Doug. Some of the captain's cowboys was in here talking about you when I came in. They finally recognized me and shut up. They were betting on how quick you'd be out of the country.
The proprietor had been watching Monahan until he figured out for sure who he was. Now he came back smiling, bringing a bottle.
Welcome, Mr. Monahan. My name's Chris Hadley. This is my place.
Hadley picked up the bottle Stubb had been using and put the other one down in his place.
This is on the house. It's a pleasure to serve someone that's had the nerve to stomp the captain's toes.
I'm afraid you got it backwards, friend. He did all the stomping.
You're still in town, aren't you?
Hadley was a shortish man, growing heavy now in his late 40s, his hair receding to a light stand far back on his head. There was something about him that made him a little out of place as a saloon keeper. He bore himself with a dignity which hinted of a better background than this. Presently, a couple of cowboys pushed through the door and stood looking over the thin scattering of customers. The pair wore woolen coats, unbuttoned now because the day was not unpleasant. They had on chaps and spurs, and one wore leather gloves. They spotted Monahan and moved toward him. Monahan tensed, an angry red ridge running along his cheekbone. The tall one in the lead was Archer Spann.
Monahan, the captain's outside. He wants to see you.
Tell him if he wants to see me, he knows where I'm at.
When the captain says jump, you jump.
I don't.
Monahan sat there with a deep anger smoldering in him. He was hoping this grim man would make a move toward him, hoping for an excuse to lay his gun barrel against that hard jaw and watch those black eyes roll back. Span shifted his weight uncertainly from one foot to the other. It was plain enough he wasn't used to running up against a situation like this. But he couldn't miss the dangerous smolder in the fence builder's eyes. Suddenly he turned and walked out again. The proprietor moved to the front window and looked outside.
It's Captain Reinhardt, all right. He's out front there on that big gray horse of his. 4 years I've had this place, and the captain's never set foot in it. Folks used to ask him permission to do this or do that. I never did. I put this place up, but I never asked him anything. A couple of years, no R-Cross cowboy ever came in here either. But they've been starting to drift in. The old man's word doesn't carry as strongly as it used to.
Span came in first and held the door open. Captain Andrew Reinhardt strode in with stiff dignity. He paused a moment, letting his eyes accustom themselves to the room light.
He's back here, Captain.
It took the captain a moment to pick Monahan out. Monahan stood up slowly and pushed his chair back. The captain stopped a full pace in front of the table.
I thought you'd be gone.
I'm still here.
Maybe you're broke. I understand you've got some barbed wire stored over at Tracy's Mercantile. I'll buy it from you. That'll give you enough money to be on your way.
I'm not broke. Point is, I'm not running. I'll leave when I get ready, and I'm not ready.
I'm trying to be fair about this, Monahan.
Oh, like you were yesterday?
What happened yesterday wasn't all planned. Sometimes things just happen that weren't figured on at all. You'd better forget it.
Forget it? Twice now, Monahan had heard that.
You burned up my wagons, destroyed my supplies, and killed a harmless old man. How do you think I could forget that?
Sometimes it's best for a man to make himself forget, Monahan.
I bet you never did, Captain. I bet you never in your life let a man get away with anything.
Monahan, I was in this country when you were just a little boy. I came out here when everybody else was afraid to. There were Injuns here, but I took the country and I held it. Other people have come in, sure, but only because I let them. It's still my country. It goes by my rules. They've been fair rules. One way or another, I've seen that they've been kept. People may say I've been a hard man. Well, it took a hard man to run the Injuns out. It took a hard man to get rid of the cow thieves. Even yet, there's all kinds of land grabbers and leeches waiting to move in here the minute I soften up. They'd love to see Kiowa County split apart. And you know how barbed wire can split people apart. It's done at other places, and it would do it here. I'll not allow you to come in and stir up dissension. I've told you to leave. I'll not tell you again.
Doug Monahan had been standing out of his habitual deference for men older than himself. He suddenly realized what he was doing, and he sat down. He said nothing, but the defiance in his eyes gave his answer. The captain stood there stiff-backed, his old fists doubled. Span moved up to the captain's side.
I'll take care of this for you, sir.
No! No saloon brawl. You're feeling ringy, Monahan, because one of your men was killed. I'll take that into account for now. But don't crowd your luck.
Reinhardt turned on his heel and strode stiffly out the door. Span hung back, watching Monahan.
You won't find me as easy to talk down as the old man.
And you won't find me as easy to kill as a poor old Mexican with a pot hook in his hand.
The saloon keeper, Chris Hadley, stood at the window, wiping his hands on his apron as he watched the riders pull away. He came back, a little nervousness still hanging on him.
Well, Monahan, you've made the history books, but what are you going to do now?
Build fence, if I can. I'm not running away.
Chris Hadley was more than just a barkeeper. He was a man given to quiet contemplation.
Maybe you're the one, Monahan. I don't know. For a long time, we've needed somebody to wake people up and make them stand for their rights. The captain was a great man for his time. He came here when it was a raw and wild land. He tamed it and built it up. But he got it to a point where it suits him. And now he wants it to stay there. In the old countries, he's what you'd call a benevolent despot.
What's benevolent about him?
There are some good things about him, believe it or not. But he's still a despot, and we've outgrown that kind of man, Monahan. We've outgrown him, but we're too weak to do anything about it.
Presently, two men came in and walked up to the bar.
Hey, Chris! Wasn't that the captain we saw walking out of here?
Yep.
Woo-wee! You must be coming to the end of the world. I saw the captain riding out of town like he was on his way to a lynching. Big bunch of R-Cross cowboys was with him. All but one. That Wheeler boy stayed in town.
Wheeler? Vern Wheeler? Where'd he go?
Last I seen, he was headed in the direction of your house.